Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Rachel Forsyth, senior reporter at Hort Week, and since it's International Women's Day this week, we have got an exceptional woman on the podcast, Jo Hedger, arborist extraordinaire. Welcome, Jo. How are you?
Yeah, hi. Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you for asking me on.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. So what's keeping you busy at the moment?
So as an arborist at the moment, autumn going into spring is a really busy time for pruning. So yeah, we're really busy at the moment doing a lot of large pruning jobs before March.
Oh, of course, of course. Last year you won the Female European Tree Climbing Championship, which I think was your sixth mm-hmm. win, is that correct?
Yeah, that was my sixth European title, and it was also the same year was my fifth world title as well. So it was quite a good year last year.
Oh, wow. Wow. What are those competitions like? What's the experience like?
Oh, they're great. They're great. I mean, if you know nothing about climbing and you were just spectating, they are fascinating because you have no idea that people can move through the trees freely, like as freely as possible. I mean, we're all roped in.
Yeah.
But it's as free movement and fast, and we don't use chainsaws. It's all just moving around the canopy as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So from a spectator's point of view, it's fascinating. And then from a climbing point of view, it's really benefited myself as an arborist. So it's really educational. I've learned a huge amount. I mean, if I was still climbing the way I was taught at college, I wouldn't be climbing now as an arborist, because the techniques are quite basic when you first learn. So it's very physical.
Right.
Whereas now there's a lot more modern techniques and equipment and loads of things I've learned from the competitions. So really beneficial.
I mean, I've seen it and it is incredible to watch. It's so entertaining. What are they judging you on?
A number of things. I mean, speed is obviously one of the key points, but the whole reason for the competition originally was to educate the public on what an arborist was or is.
Okay.
So that was the whole reason. So although speed comes into it, we technically aren't running around the trees and wrecking them, breaking branches and things like that. We have to go quickly, but we have to be efficient. So they're looking at the smoothness, how careful we are with the tree as well, the route that we take. They're judging our ability on equipment, how we're using it, and also how we talk as well, because there's elements of communication as well, because when you're an arborist, you're not just working on your own, you're working with other people. So yeah, there's a lot of elements to it.
Yeah, a lot to take in. How does it feel to have those wins under your belt, and so many as well? It's so impressive.
Oh, it's great. I mean, I never, as I said, as another thing I accidentally kind of got into, I didn't know that there was competitions to do with tree climbing. So I kind of just stumbled across it, and I was intrigued by it because I was same thing. I could climb around a tree at work with a chainsaw, but I'd never seen anyone move quickly or run along branches. So I was fascinated, but and so inspired. But I never set out to try and win anything. It just, you know, the more I did, the more I didn't do very well, the more it inspired me to want to do better. So
nice, yeah.
It kind of, I never kind of got defeated. I was more like, okay, I'm not quite good enough, but maybe I can learn and practice and things like that. And then over the years, obviously, I've got better, and my ability seems to have improved the longer I've gone on, which is kind of, it's a bit backward. Most sports, you're probably, when you're younger, in your prime, shall we say.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
But it's still physical, but it's a lot of it's mental as well, and planning, and, you know, it's experience of what you've done wrong in the past, basically, as well. So there's another element to it, not just the physical side as well.
Yes, and it's good, healthy competition, isn't it, that kind of gives you that motivation.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah.
No, it's really friendly environment too. It's good.
I can imagine that. I mean, it's such a supportive industry in general, isn't it? So it's kind of like they always say, you know, at Chelsea and things like that, that's such a nice sharing environment. And I imagine it's similar at competitions like that.
Oh, yeah. It's a really strange environment, because you would expect, particularly when you get to like the World Championships, you'd expect that everyone is focused and they don't talk to each other and they don't help. But it's strange. You still, because you're all friends and you kind of help each other. And I think ultimately we come from an industry where we are a team. Mm. So a climber is only as good as their ground staff, because they can help each other and they see different things. So it's very hard to go to a competition and watch a fellow climber almost go to make a mistake, so they take the wrong route. Because at work you would always say, oh, you know, look at this angle or whatever.
Oh, of course.
So, yeah, we kind of just, everyone does it. And it's a bizarre thing to be in competition with someone, yet you're all kind of helping each other.
So before I came into this industry, I had absolutely no idea what an arborist was. Were you a little bit more aware than I was? How did you first hear about it?
No, I didn't actually know what an arborist was, or I didn't really know about arboriculture.
Yeah.
I kind of accidentally came across it, I suppose. my dad did forestry, so like growing up I was always around timber and chainsaws and things like that, so I was around that kind of industry, I suppose. And then I didn't really know what I wanted to do as a career, so I actually decided to go into horticulture originally, and I went to college to basically start studying horticulture. And I realised that I like being outside, but I noticed that when we learnt more about trees, I was a lot more engaged in that. And anyway, so at the college, they also did arboriculture, and in the first couple of weeks, they climbed trees around the college campus. So I was like, oh, what's that? What are they doing? That looks like good fun. So yeah, I basically did my first year of horticulture, and then I changed to arboriculture once I kind of found out what it was, and yeah, loved it.
Fell in love, yeah. And where did you go from there? Because I know you set up Arborventure Tree Care in 2005, right? But what happened between then, I suppose?
So I basically worked for a couple of small local tree care companies near where I'm based in Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And I started doing, so that was for about 2 years after I left college. And then my progression was kind of, I did a little bit of my own work, and the way that my dad brought me up was, you know, being self-employed and things like that. So he taught me a lot about how to run business and things like that.
That is a handy person to have.
Yeah, no, he taught me a lot of really good, useful life skills as far as business goes. So anyway, so I kind of realised that maybe I should do it a bit more on my own sort of thing. I probably, in hindsight, was probably still very young, maybe, to do it on my, like, because I was still in my, like, early 20s. But I have no regrets starting business that young. I had to learn a lot of things, but, it's grown really well, so very pleased.
Is there anything you'd do a bit differently looking back now at the start?
Probably not really. Like I say, I was quite young, and obviously being female as well, it was quite a rare thing in a borough culture, particularly at that time, because I'm going back now 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But I never really had any problems, and I never really sort of faced anything that was as a problem. And I had got good guidance from my dad as far as business goes. So I probably wouldn't change anything. No, I learn a lot.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of learning grounds, isn't it? So
yeah, it's just the way it went.
Yeah. And how did you grow that business through the years?
Pretty slow to start with, like most businesses in the first sort of 3 years sort of thing. I kind of had to work out what my market was as such, where what kind of treat. It sounds funny about what your market is, thinking it's just trees. But, what I mean by that is, what kind of work do you want to do? Because, you know, you could just cut down trees, you can just drop branches and use chainsaws and things like that. But I had a good skill for climbing difficult trees and rigging and taking down difficult trees, or pruning really nice trees and making really good job of it to make sure that the tree was pruned correctly. So I had a few years trying to work out what kind of, I don't know, market, whether it's private or commercial, customers I wanted to kind of market ourselves to. So that took a few years, and then just slowly built it, getting good employees. That was a really key point.
Yeah, how many members do you have of the team now?
At the moment, we have 8.
Oh, okay.
Which I could easily increase that, but I do not want to, because we're at a happy number.
Mm.
More people, more problems, and less doing of what I like, if that makes sense, because I still like climbing trees, so 8 is a really good number.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. How much time do you find yourself still climbing those trees versus in the office kind of trying to just run the business day to day?
Yeah, so I tried to avoid being in the office too much, because most people I knew that were good at climbing and then ran their own business, their biggest complaint was that they ended up doing office work, which wasn't the reason that they originally went into a borough culture. It's just the way it happened. So I tried to really build the business around good people in the office that were able to do the job for me. I still have to do a lot of office based stuff, but not nowhere near, I don't answer the phone, I don't have to deal with emails. I have really good office staff that can do that. And I try to go out climbing probably 2 or 3 times a week, and the rest of the time is looking at trees for customers and other activities.
Well, yeah, I think that's so true. And it's, I know a lot of the time that kind of passion and love for something like a borough culture, it's difficult to turn that into a business because you don't have those skills necessarily. And, you know, it's such a big thing, and you haven't necessarily gone on a course to learn how to run a business. So it's great that you had your dad, but it's also great that you're kind of bringing in those skills as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's like anybody that's has a passion or a skill for something, they then decide, oh, I can make this into a business. They don't necessarily have the skill for business. They just have the skill for the whatever it is that they're trying to sell. But yeah, you either have to learn to do the business, like you say, have guidance from someone else, or you have to learn to let other people do the business bit for you, which is hard. It's hard to let other people do things for you when you run a business. You have to let them do their job.
Yeah, it's like your baby, isn't it? You don't want to necessarily give up that control bit. What are some of your other career highlights over the years?
One of the things is becoming ARB approved. from the Arb Association. It was something that was kind mm-hmm. of a bit of a business goal to kind of get. Not necessarily to achieve work from it. Some people use it as a way of gaining contracts or things commercially with companies. It wasn't necessarily that. It was more just a personal goal from a business point of view. You know, do I have things in place? What things can I do to improve my business? And to be fair, it really highlighted a lot of things that I wasn't really doing very well with, you know, things in place with health and safety and things like that. I was okay, as in from a business point of view, making sure the paperwork was in place and legislation, things maybe I wasn't quite so familiar with. So that was really good. It was a real achievement. I think we did that about 10 or 12, maybe a bit longer now. Maybe about 15 years ago we achieved that. So that was a sort of a business goal of mine. Some of the work that we've done, you know, we've worked on some very sort of historic trees, and I live in the New Forest, so there's a lot of ancient oaks in particular, yeah, and it's quite fascinating to think that some of the trees that we work on, no one's ever climbed before, or we're able to like veterinise them and look after them, and so yeah, there's a lot of special sites that we've worked at that are very unique and quite special that we've worked on those trees, really. Kind of an honour, really.
Yeah, they are gorgeous trees. They really are. One of my favourites.
Yeah.
What would you say are some of the biggest challenges facing this industry at the moment?
Probably the recognition of the professionalism of it as an industry.
Yeah.
So if you take it on par with, let's say, an electrician, homeowners or even commercial customers would be prepared to pay the rate that an electrician, for example, would charge them.
Yeah.
But for some reason, because arboriculture, or just tree surgery as the common term, has always been seen as a bit of a, well, you've got a ladder and a chainsaw and a truck and you just cut the branch off. It technically, yes, anyone can do it. But there's a lot of skill involved in it. There's a lot of knowledge and ability and equipment and all the, like I say, the business side of it that I think is still lacking. It's getting better, but I still think there's a big difference in our industry professional wise for recognition of what we do as an industry. So I think
100%.
I think that, and obviously that goes in tow with money and payments, and obviously what we can pay our employees. I mean, they do a really dangerous job. You know, we're climbing, you know, let's say 30 metres on a 12-millimetre piece of rope with a chainsaw that cuts at, you know, 20 metres per second, and then you're cutting branches and anchor points that aren't rated, and it's all wood. And, you know, there's lots of things about our industry and, you know, the education that we have that I really would hope that in the next, I don't know, 10, 15 years, it's really recognised. It's definitely getting better, but it's definitely not the same as other industries that don't have quite the risk factor, shall we say.
Yeah, I think you can have a lot of people screaming in agreement to that for sure. Is there anything we ourselves can be doing to kind of help move that along?
It's just promotion, really, to the wider world, the public, really. I mean, going back to when I, like you asked me earlier on about the first couple of years when I started business, you know, you take any job, you know, any job you did, and if the customer said, "Oh, it's far too expensive," you'd bring the price down, this and that. And over the years, I've just got to the point where I'm just like, no, I'll confidently say to that person, you want me to do it, you've specifically said that you want us to do it, and you've given the reasons why, and the reasons why that is the price it is because you're getting a good service, there's four members of staff, there's machinery, we're getting rid of it, and that's because I kind of try and educate the customer. But if the customers could be educated first, you know, from promotion, from our industry bodies, and whether our industry is aware of it, but all the advertising, the way I see it, all the advertising and the promotion of what we do is all within our industry already.
Yeah.
Rather than the Joe public, Because most people, if I go to something, an event, and somebody says, oh, what do you do for a living? If I said to them, I'm an arborist or I'm in a boriculture, they probably won't know what that is. But if you said to them you were in horticulture or agriculture, they would know what that is. So yeah. it's just recognition, isn't it, of what an arborist is and what they do.
And you said kind of right at the beginning that there weren't many women in arb when you first started. Has that changed? What's your experience of that nowadays?
There's definitely more than, you know, when I started. You know, it was pretty much unheard of that a female would climb trees. You'd get them on the ground using chainsaws and things, but you wouldn't really get them up in the top of the trees. So, yeah, it's definitely more common now, or maybe more, I was going to say, like, accepted. You know, it's not as much of a surprise when you say to somebody what you do, but it's now, you know, acceptable, or it's recognised that women do this industry, which is great. And they have a lot of skills to add to our industry that that men generally might not see. It's just the way that women generally think differently about tasks. They approach things, rightly or wrongly, it doesn't matter how you look at it. They may overthink it, but they will think something before acting, which can also be a downfall. You know, I may overplan something and overdo something, whereas the guys that work for me, I just get on with it, just do it. And you're like, oh, okay, let's just do it. But so there's that side of it. And actually, as a mixed group of people on a site, male and female, it works really well. There's a good dynamic between what each person can give. And and also physical differences, just because a female may not be as physically strong as a male, that means that they may be lighter, so they're pruning, you know, they'd be really good at small pruning jobs, whereas, you know, you get a big heavy guy, they're not going to be able to prune the end of a light maple tree that's going to be snapping easily. So yeah, there's a lot of benefits and disadvantages to both sides, really.
Yeah, I mean, that diversity in a team is why it's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it works.
What would you say is the biggest misconception about arb work, whether that's from the public or people maybe trying to come into the industry?
So somebody coming into the industry, the misconception is they're going to get paid loads of money because they're going to be a climber. Because there is. It's strange, because when you actually start going into it, you'd think, oh, hold on a minute, I'm climbing trees, I'm at height, and I've got to do all this training.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You think you're going to be paid extremely well, but like I said earlier, you can only pay in relation to what a customer wants to be able to pay. So there's that misconception. And then maybe the public, they have very little prior knowledge or realisation of how much knowledge and skill that we have as an arborist, the way we climb around a tree and how we can, it's actually quite an artistic.
It is.
You know, reducing trees is actually really artistic. You have to really see the finished product before you've cut the branch off.
Yeah.
So you have to really, it's a really big skill, and, you know, the amount of machinery and the cost of everything. And it's interesting talking to a customer beforehand saying, look, I agree, you may think it's quite expensive, but trust me, you're going to have this, this and this done. We're going to get rid of it, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
You do the job, and what's interesting afterwards is the customer will say to you, wow, I had no idea that you could do that to the tree, that you had all that machinery. You know, they look at a chipper, for example, and they obviously love the chipper, because you've got a branch in, it makes a noise, and little bits of chip come out the back end of it. And people love that.
It's pretty cool.
Well, they think about their garden waste. They suddenly think, oh, that's a good way of getting rid of all that rubbish. So they say, oh, you know, how much is one of those? And I normally look at their car and I say, well, your car's cheaper than that chipper. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you just put it on the back of a vehicle and drive it around and it's more than my car. I'm like, yeah, that's like, and we have a number of them and we have to maintain them and things like that. So
yeah
it's they always realize after the event. So maybe the misconception at the beginning is how skilled and what an arborist can actually do.
Oh, well, thank you so much for chatting to me today, Jo. My last question is one we ask every guest, and it is, what plant would you take to a desert island?
So if it was about me surviving, I'd probably take an apple tree.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Because they look nice when they bloom and then you could eat the apple, hopefully if it was a nice apple.
Yeah.
But they're not that great for climbing. So if it was something that was fun that I could then climb forever, and it's going to be dry because it's on a desert island, I would say a beech tree. Nice open crown beech tree, big spreading limbs, nice bone dry to run around on.
And still quite beautiful as well, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, a copper beech. There we go. I have a copper beech. It'll look really nice.
What is your favourite tree? Do you have one?
Beech is definitely oak, English oak, you know, majestic sort of big old oaks. And I really like tulip trees, but you don't get too many of them.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I've seen one.
Very rarely do you get them in flower. A good tulip tree that hasn't been pruned as well, because sometimes when they get pruned, they look quite ugly. But yeah, an untouched tulip tree in flower is pretty cool.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Jo, again.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Rachel Forsyth, and this has been the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe or follow Horticulture Week podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. If you are interested in producing a podcast with Horticulture Week, email us at hortweek@haymarket.com. Huge thank you again to Jo, and goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.